activate the view screen, and turn on your universal translators, because it is time for another Galactic Netcast. Brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/galacticnetcasts. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
We interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This Earth of yours will be reduced to a burned-out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
Hey, it's Thursday, November 7th, 2013. Welcome to another Galactic Netcast. This is the Alien Invasion number 89. Brad, can you believe we're already at 89? Time has just flown by.
I was kind of, my math was a little off, and I was like, are we doing 90? Are we? But wow. And don't take this wrong, but I never thought we'd get this far. I never pictured... was just going to come off.
Not many shows make it this far, really. You know?
Yeah. And, you know, like I've been listening to the Nerdists, and they're well over, you know, 450 episodes or something like that now. And it's cool to see podcasts that have some longevity. So it's kind of cool that we're still excited and interested in the topic and still making it happen. So
we should do something
special. It's a good thing.
We should do something special for 100. That's 11 episodes away. So we should
we should plan now.
Yeah. All right. So let me introduce myself. I'm Dave. Whatever there is injustice, you will find us, Nelson. Joining me this evening from Wausau, Wisconsin is Brad. Wherever there's suffering, we'll be there, Ludwig. And filling in for Anessa Moyens is Corey. Wherever liberty is threatened, you will find the three amigos, Scott. From where are you exactly in California? I forget.
I'm in Sonoma County, so I'm about an hour north of San Francisco.
And you're close to Petaluma, right?
Yeah, I'm the next town over from Petaluma.
Okay.
Well, there's some towns that don't really count on the way. I'm in Runner Park. Runner Park is part of a township with Gatati. And Petaluma, there's a town called Pengrove that kind of hangs on like a small growth.
Okay, small girls. I like it. So, introduce yourself. What do you do? What are you into? What's your specialty in life? What's the deal, Corey?
I'm still trying to figure out the deal. Lately, I've been doing a lot of stuff with just in general trying to do more with podcasts and stuff. I do the Spreecast every week with Glenn and Greg, the What's Up Weekly or What We're Watching Weekly Spreecast that you started me with.
Yeah, that's how we met. Yep.
Yeah. And I still do my podcast with my group, the D20 at the D20.net, which is very sporadic. What you guys are talking about with numbers, if we had been doing our show regularly for the last several years, we would probably be well into the hundreds, but we're nowhere near that. And I think that's kind of the key, is that I will take a podcast with low numbers but a regular schedule over irregularity of people who just kind of get to it when they get to it, because you just... It's not that you lose interest, but it's hard to remember the excitement that you had for it when they come back once every 6 or 7 months.
It's not good to take breaks. Like, we've taken a few breaks, like, not lengthy, but, you know, a few week breaks.
Urination.
Yeah. And it's good to come back and do a bunch. Like, we're on a big time roll right now, Brad. I don't remember the last time we took a break. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been a little bit.
Yeah. So hopefully we can keep that up and keep it going to 100 and more. I had another question about what you do. You're like a comic writer, right? You write your own comic.
I do write a comic strip. We're also on hiatus right now. So that's because the artist is just been having a lot of stuff going on and everything. But we were being published every month in Flint Comics in Flint, Michigan. And we also run the website and maintain everything, and I post the strips and do the blog for it, and essentially everything that Levi won't do, which is anything dealing with people or promotion.
Okay, cool. See, Brad is so jealous because Brad is a huge comic book dork. He loves them. So
huge comic book nerd.
All right, so this is the show where we talk about beings from elsewhere in the universe. We're talking extraterrestrial aliens and their appearances in TV, film, video games, comic books, science, and in real life. The show is sectioned off into three areas. We do the news, the creature feature, that's the spotlight of a certain kind of alien, and our picks for the week. For the audio subscribers, you can see us do the show live every Thursday night. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Google Plus. Find out when and where it's going to be. Or watch us after the fact at youtube.com/galacticnetcasts. Now, Corey, you have watched the show. You've listened to the show before, right?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, just to get caught up, I was listening to some episodes today at the store that I help out at.
Okay. All right, so let's start the show with, of course, this.
In the news.
And Brad, you've got the first story.
I am up first. 20 iconic aliens that transformed Hollywood is what we're going to kick off with. So Mashable came up with a list of aliens that kind of changed the portrayal of aliens in movies, and though they're now associated with bloated big budget blockbusters, extraterrestrials have kind of captured the imaginations and stretched the limits of cinematic creativity since the earliest days of movies. Flashing tentacles, tails, and teeth, aliens have invaded stories for purposes of terror, friendship, and sometimes enlightenment. Like much science fiction, the best alien stories teach us what it means to be human. Other times, they just blow stuff up.
Most times, actually. Most times.
Yeah.
How is that not like humans?
True enough. I've seen a few Schwarzenegger films. I know how that goes.
It's exactly like humans.
So somehow the folks at Mashable whittled down a list of their favorite alien flicks to a respectable 20, and we're going to talk about six of them.
Before you start, I love the first one. My first one's a favorite.
You know, I have never seen this, I'm actually kind of interested in checking this out.
I have not either.
Well, Lady Gaga has been quite popular, and I think that this is one of her earlier looks.
Yeah, actually, I did kind of – I'm like, I think I've seen that before. And yeah, I think you're right. And the first one that we're kind of hinting at here is Alita, Queen of Mars from 1924. The Queen of Mars, Alita, falls in love with a Russian man after watching him through a high-powered telescope pointed at the Earth. In this film, Martians look very similar to Earthlings, the only real difference being that Martians wear hats. And by hats, they look like flattened rabbit ear antennae for the kids who are under 20. There was a time when we didn't have digital television, and if you wanted to get a TV signal, you had to have what we called rabbit ears, and they were like antennas that were screwed into the back of the televisions. And looks like she's got these antennas kind of pointing out, kind of starting at the at her temples and kind of working to the back of her head, and these things are pointing straight out. But like Corey said, if you've seen an early Lady Gaga, it looks like one of those hats.
You know, it also looks like one of those things that people used to use to dry certain items. I think like lingerie or delicates.
Right.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, underneath of Cloud City.
That's a good one, too.
Yep.
Do you have a lot of lingerie?
No, I don't.
You need to dry out?
I don't. I knew you were going to ask me that, but I don't. No, I don't.
All right, moving on. Hey.
Thanks.
I just want to point out, though, that it's kind of nice that it's a distinguishing factor is that aliens have hats, and, of course, men are without hats.
You can.
And then we say
see,
yes.
You know, well, this is 1924 in Russia, which I'm thinking.
Oh.
We were wearing hats. Americans were wearing hats in the 20s, well, really up until JFK.
But only for warmth, not for fashion.
And nobody was wearing hats like this. So
that is very true.
Yeah,
that is very, very true. The second film, and this isn't the Keanu Reeves reboot. This is the original 1951, The Day the Earth Stood Still. And it's a haunting allegory to xenophobia. The aliens in this film appear drastically similar to men in sweatsuits wearing helmets. Although Gort looks like the Stig from Top Gear. A very tall Stig.
Who is that? I've never even watched Top Gear.
Oh, Top Gear, they had a they called him the Stig, and he was he's the driver. He wore a white racing sort of a suit and a white helmet, and you never really saw his face.
Oh, okay. So just the guy that drove the cars.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Got it.
He also looks a little bit like Ron the Space Knight.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes, he does. I feel kind of ashamed, and I think I might have lost my geek badge for not picking up on that. You're absolutely right, Corey. The third film is the 1978 version, and there's been a number of versions of this. Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And in this one, alien spores are the real villains in this eerie mystery thriller in which pod people replace humans with unfeeling counterparts.
Who is that in that picture that's in our document?
That is Donald Sutherland.
I was going to say that's I was trying to remember his name.
Yes. That is so creepy because whenever somebody who had been replaced by a pod person kind of discovered that somebody had not been replaced yet, they would kind of point and then they would do this scream. And the only way to simulate it would be if you were to like scream while sucking in air. It's this really creepy. It's like that.
That picture of Donald Sutherland always freaked me out because he was in Animal House, and there's a scene in Animal House where he's walking around with just a shirt on and no pants or underwear, and he reaches up to get some cups, and when he turns around, well, first you see his bare
bottom. You see his ace.
And then I always imagined he was going to turn around and be making that face at me from both sides.
From both sides. All right. I'd not want to see that.
No.
No.
But the remake had, I think it was Gabriel Anwar from Burn Notice, came out in the 90s, and it was actually pretty decent.
Yep.
There's been a ton of remakes of Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
And actually, there was a TV version of it.
Yeah.
God, around the time, I think the first or second year into Lost, that was a meteor shower. There were, all this stuff landed in this area off the coast of Florida. I think it was.
What network kind of was that? Was that it? Was it called Invasion of the Body Snatchers?
I think it was called Invasion.
Invasion.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Well, it was only on for half or one season, I think. I'd have to pull it up. It wasn't on for very long.
I think it was around the same time that Threshold was on, which was a better show, but unfortunately also didn't catch on.
Wait a second. Yeah. I do remember Invasion. Yeah, there was, because you mentioned
it was
the other...
Like the sheriff was like one of the main characters.
Yes,
he was...
yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
The next film on our list is Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan! From 1982. In nearly 50 years on TV and movie screens, Star Trek has featured dozens of alien races, mostly distinguishable by their prosthetics and makeup. And I'm not reading that last part because obviously my girlfriend put that in there.
But she's so right.
Well, yes. His chest is as smooth as Corinthian leather. Absolutely right. All right, the next. Independence Day from 1996. Say what you will about Independence Day, it was a great popcorn movie from that year. I remember going to see that, and I actually saw it on July 4th, and everybody in the theater like stood up and clapped and shouted at the end. It was a fun romp.
It was sort of the beginning of a new generation of summer blockbusters, really.
Yeah, it really was. You're absolutely right there. Large, seemingly invincible spacecrafts appear over some of the most significant locations across the globe, and the creatures inside are not friendly. This Will Smith classic is a great reminder to update your security software.
That's
one of the great flaws of the film that just kind of makes you scratch your head. And what? My personal favorite that's on this list here is District 9 from 2009. The prawn-like hoarder aliens living on Earth face oppression and injustice as relocation operative Wickus Van de Weer, I can never pronounce his last name, Mirway, learns you don't know what it's like until you try it.
Yep, literally.
Yeah.
I felt bad for him.
The thing that always got to me about that film is the whole section where they're talking with people and giving their reactions about the prawns, the aliens that came, how they got the reactions that they got from the people. And if you watch the film and you know that actually they had gone out as a camera crew and pretended like they were doing – a documentary on the I believe it's Nigerians that had immigrated to the area.
Yep, you're right.
And they said that they were doing a documentary about the slum area, the Nigerians that had moved into the area, that and the things that they say. And they're using this in the context of the prawns, but to know that people actually talk about that way about other human beings is just even more chilling when you see the movie. If you haven't seen District 9, you need to watch it because it's such a wonderful, wonderful film. Because it's not so much about the sci-fi, I don't think.
No, it's not.
It's really about understanding
differences,
compassion. You know, Wickus has zero compassion for the prawns. And by the time he gets to the end of this, he realizes what a jackass he really, really was.
What a better way to find your flaws than to become the person that you, or the being, or the people that you hate, you know?
Yeah, and you know, if you haven't seen the film, you probably gathered what happens at the end. But definitely, well worth watching. If you want to see the rest, and we only did six here, if you want to see the rest of the list of the other 14 on the list, check out Mashable's website, and we're going to post a link on the show notes for this. But definitely, you want to check out the full list. It's a good one.
Is E.T. on is E.T. on that list? I didn't look at it.
Yes.
Okay.
Hey. Yeah, there's some really, really good aliens on the rest of this list, but yeah.
Although Louis Gossett Jr. from Enemy Mine, I don't think is on there, and that's one of what I probably would have thought of.
Really?
That was a favorite of mine as a kid.
Wow, Superman, The Blob, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Star Wars.
Sorry. There's awesome stuff here.
Yeah, there's a huge list.
Totally check this out.
Yeah, look at it. Enjoy it. Be it.
I don't know. Be a list.
Yes.
Not an alien, just a list.
Yeah.
Just a list.
All right, thank you very much, Brad. Interesting. I love these lists. They're for one, they're easy to prepare if you're actually prepping the show. It's an easy story there's not much involved. There's no editing involved. And number two, it's just kind of fun to go through and see if we agree or disagree, or if our favorites are on that certain list, or yeah, lists are good. That's why I like BuzzFeed so much. Just a whole bunch of lists. All right, let's move on to the second story, which is mine.
That is yours.
Yeah. How would you like to play a game where you are the alien, not the humans?
Sign me up.
Corey?
Well, I mean, I've played that. There was the Alien versus Predator games that you could choose to play the alien or the predator or the humans, and I don't know anybody who decided to play a space marine in that setup.
Yeah, because you're pretty much dead. You're not.
Yeah.
So, okay, so it's not often that we can be the mysterious extraterrestrial that all humans are terrified of. Though, Paradise Lost, First Contact, is a game where you get to play as an alien plant that comes to Earth via a meteor. The humans try to figure out what you are, of course, but this doesn't exactly go as planned. The game is a side-scrolling adventure with heavy focus on stealth and action. The developers Ashtree Works promise levels of huge maps with lots of secrets, traps, and puzzles. The idea being that it'll be a... how do you pronounce that word, Brad?
Metroidvania.
What is Metroidvania?
They're kind of combining the concepts of the game Metroid and Castlevania.
Oh, okay. See... Me, not a gamer, so thank you. Thanks for the definition. I appreciate
it. I speak gamer.
As well as some form of RPG skill progression, any terrifying alien worth its salt evolves into something more sinister. You'll also have abilities like camo, decoys, bombs, and some form of mental control. Oh, my God, that would be fun. Mental control?
Well, I don't think I mean controlling your own thoughts, Dave. I think it's actually you're controlling the soldiers that you're fighting against.
Yeah, that's what
but,
I meant.
But good on you for trying. The therapy is working.
Okay. All right. I would love to be an alien with that kind of power. And you know what? That kind of alien has never really been used too much in either video games or movies, right? Alien that controls other people's thoughts or actions.
Yeah, well, you know, Independence Day popped into my head just because we talked about that, but they couldn't do it to a living person. They had to kill the doctor, and then they were able to use him as like a megaphone for all intents and purposes.
So the most important part of the story is this is a Kickstarter. They hope to raise about $70,000 to make this game.
I pulled it up here, and typically... From what I've seen, yeah, it started November 1st.
Oh,
so 7 days ago.
They're going to make
it. They're already at 51,000.
Yeah, they have 23 days to go. That's no problem.
Yeah.
It's looking pretty positive for them and good for them.
I love the heck out of Kickstarter. I got involved in a Kickstarter. I think the original amount that they were looking for was $20,000, and it was for an RPG. Basically, they're miniatures for Dungeons and Dragons or whatever, Pathfinder. Their original amount that they were looking for was $20,000. They raised close to $3 million.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I actually just received my Veronica Mars t-shirt today when I came home from work.
Oh, because you was a part of the Kickstarter for the movie?
Yep.
So that that movie's actually being made then?
I think it's actually almost done from what
I think they. I thought that they wrapped up shooting or almost wrapped.
So did they start the Kickstarter after it went into production or before?
Before.
I believe the Rob Thomas was already pretty much far into the idea and he had pitched it to everybody, so it was a matter of raising the cash for it. But he had taken it to... Warner Brothers first, and they said, well, if you raise this amount of money, we'll go ahead and do the distribution.
Yep.
So I think there was a lot of work done. I've seen comic Kickstarters take a lot longer to have a turnaround on getting a product than this.
I'm sure the infrastructure was in place, though. You know, I'm sure that they were ready to go. You know, we just need the cash, and we can start production.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, this video game sounds fascinating. It kind of goes back to the whole District 9, too, because you're actually playing as an alien because the main character in District 9 became an alien. Spoiler alert. Sorry. So it's kind of interesting. It would be interesting to see the faces of terrified humans as you come at them. But this, you won't see that. This is a side-scroller, right? You won't actually see the faces of your victims too much.
Yeah, they also said it had to do with stealth and things like that, so I wonder if it's you're fighting them as much as you're trying to protect yourself.
I'm kind of wondering if it's both. I've got the video up here right now, and at this point you escape and you're moving through. There's the stealth. This is really interesting.
It looks cool. I love side scrollers. This is great. This makes for a great audio podcast too.
Yes, absolutely. We're going to have the link to this where you can check out the YouTube video.
And you can listen to the sound too yourself.
Yes, you can get the sound as well. There's a lot of things. This is so cool that it's just a wonderful callback to side scrollers from. I'm watching this and I'm thinking of a friend of mine had a Commodore 64.
Yeah.
And we used to play Impossible Mission.
That's what it was reminding me of as well. I had a Commodore.
Yeah. So just a really, 8-bit all the way, and it's just really, really kind of interesting.
But the graphics.
Does it say what systems it's going to play on? If it's going to play on a video game system, or if it's going to be a phone or something else?
Know, that's a very good question. I'm pulling up the Kickstarter page right now. Well, they definitely have a bunch of stretch goals. Mac, up to 70,000, Windows, Mac, and Linux.
Okay.
If they make it up to 200,000, they're going to do PS3, PS4, and PS Vista, Vita versions.
So I'm guessing it costs more to develop for a game platform than it does for a PC.
I believe when you go to pitch for a console, you have to pay for the developer kit from Microsoft or from PlayStation or from Nintendo.
Okay.
So that cost probably comes into place. And then you have to reprogram it, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
cool.
So there you go. This is pretty interesting. And looking at, we just talked, they're just 7 days into this. And they're at, like I said, just under 52,000. They're going to reach their goal, their initial goal for sure. And hopefully they'll, because 250,000 is where they're going to come up with the Wii U version. So it'd be cool to see them really succeed and hit that that stretch goal. But like I said, that one Kickstarter that I got on board with, close to $3 million.
Yeah, I'm not a gamer, but this looks pretty awesome. I would play this, definitely.
Yeah.
It seems like the right speed for someone who's not a gamer, for someone who's just casually wants to play, too. Because some of the games get really complicated and unnecessarily so.
Yeah.
If you just want to get something that's going to give you some story and have some fun, that's probably the right kind of project for something like this.
This reminds me of, like, the only games I'll ever play are, like, the Google, like, Google Doodles that become a game. Those are the games I play.
Yeah.
So that's about my speed. All right, that is it for that story. Before we move on to Corey's, let's need to ask you guys, we need to ask you a favor. Please leave us feedback, all right? So if you disagree with anything that we say on this show, or if you have a thought that we didn't bring up because of one of these stories, we want to know about it. Or if you think Brad needs to get rid of more comics, or if Anessa doesn't say enough, that's what she said jokes, or, you know, any kind of thing. You can nitpick away. Just leave us some feedback, and there's a bunch of different ways you can do that. You can call our voicemail number, which is also text number. It's 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966. You can call, that's our voicemail. You can email us, GalacticNetCasts. That's GalacticNetCasts@gmail.com, or you just go to GalacticNetCasts.com and find the Contact Us link, and the rest is history. We want to know what you think of the stories, or, you know, how we're doing. You know, give us a, what's that called when you in your job?
Performance review?
Yeah, performance review. We would love a performance review, definitely.
A report card?
Yeah, report card, sure. As long as it's not all F's. I don't want to fail in podcasting.
You can be as harsh as you want to on me. I don't get those emails.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Knock me down.
As long as they're not like those dumb YouTube comments. Because all
first,
All we've gotten are just bad YouTube, like, stupid, an hour of talking, dumb. I'm just saying, just don't be one of those guys. Be, you know, be constructive.
Be three of those guys, because that helps our viewership.
There you go. Yeah. We don't care in what form you take as long as you're watching.
If you think we suck, how about you tell us why you think we suck?
Yeah. Give us a little context. That's nice. All right, Corey, what do you got for us, Mr. New Guy?
All right. So this story was kind of near and dear to my heart because it is about a UFO that fires a laser at a parked car. And I like to park cars. No, actually, it happened in Michigan, which is where I was born and raised. So I was kind of interested by this. So the folks over at Dread Central, I believe dreadcentral.com, are skeptical as they can be. But every now and again, they see something that just flat out stumps them. Case in point, this video footage of a UFO over Michigan on October 27th of this year, 2013. YouTuber Research for Truth 12, because there were 11 other researchers for truths, posts the following regarding the footage, which begins with the still image and before the actual video. And he says, "Hello, I live in a rural part of Michigan," because there's no other part of Michigan. "The closest major city is Port Huron. I saw this object near my home on the night of October 27th, 2013. So I followed it down a public dirt road, because that's always a wise decision. Then it turned, so I had to turn onto a private unmarked road, which is probably used for farm equipment to tend to the adjacent field crop. At that point, I was running out of the road to go any further. So I got out of the vehicle to take a better video of it. Then suddenly the object started moving towards me. It startled me, so I ran like hell for a little bit. I was making very strange, it was making very strange low swirling noise. So please try and turn up your speaker volume to hear it better. Once I moved a distance back, I zoomed out the camera a bit and more, and I noticed that the object was hovering directly over my vehicle." Now, this is the part where I was kind of like, as the video was playing, I kept looking at it and going, it looks like a street light. It looks like a street lamp. Something is just sort of stationary. At this point, though, it started twirling around. And he says, "That's when it started to lower itself as it slowly rotated directly over my roof. At that point, it appeared to be shining a very bright green beam over it. Then suddenly, it shot straight up into the sky, and the swirling sound disappeared at the exact same time it vanished. This was a very eerie experience, and even my hair was standing on end through the entire time, and felt as if there was a highly dense static electricity in the air. What the heck do you think this is? This thing scared the bejesus out of me. Props for using bejesus."
yeah, good use of that word.
And the comments, they actually say that there was another similar sighting in Ohio. So aliens love the Midwest, which is why I'm glad I moved out here to California. But I watched the thing several times over, and it's very faint. The green beam is coming down. I wouldn't necessarily say that it looks like a laser to me. It looks more like a microwave kind of pattern, how it sort of spreads out into a cone shape more than just a straight beam of light. But it was it's intense. I mean, the amount of time that it just sort of sits there doing nothing, and I thought, all right, this is no big deal. But then instead of kind of moving around, it sort of spins on itself. It sort of changes the axis entirely in a way that I wouldn't have imagined doing. And then it just, like you said, the humming sound is there, and then it kind of blips out completely off screen.
Corey, can you poke any holes in this? Are you skeptical in any way?
I'm skeptical because it's something that I'm seeing on YouTube, and yeah, obviously where we are with things, how people can do production and stuff in their own homes, there is that part of it. But it's compelling, if nothing else. If I saw this in a film, I would think that they did a pretty good job on it. So seeing it as someone's actual experience makes it even cooler. Yeah. My wife, recently married, she freaks out at stuff like this. She is not afraid of horror movies. She loves horror movies, but aliens freak her the heck out.
Huh.
She was telling me when she heard I was going to be on the show, she's like, "You got to recommend Fire in the Sky, because Fire in the Sky is the scariest movie in the world."
Oh, it is.
To her, it is, definitely. So I sent her this link today, and I don't know if she had a chance to watch it while she was at work, but I'm pretty sure that we're not going to get any sleep in this house.
Yeah, Midwest, if you're on the West Coast, then you don't have to worry about tornadoes or UFOs shining or beaming lasers at your car.
We're just too active out here.
Yeah.
And aliens are afraid of Kardashians.
Who isn't? Who isn't afraid of Kardashians? All right, cool. This is an awesome story. I'm going to have to take a look at this video when we're done because I can't have too much going on my computer while we're recording the show. So I'm going to have to wait to watch it.
Brad? And I definitely want to spend more time looking around at Dread Central because that site seems to have some good stuff going on there.
Brad, what do you think? What's your impressions of this video? Brad?
They took Brad.
Yeah, he's gone. The aliens got him.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, now we can.
Yep.
Okay. A friend of mine has a quadcopter. Now, this looks like it's a little bit bigger than a quadcopter, but, you know, going back to, and of course, we're kind of doing stuff on video. Looking at this, there's enough open space for...
Oh, it does look like a quadcopter.
Yeah, engines. I see that.
And I've seen him, you know, this might have like 8 or maybe 12 engines on it because it does look a little bit bigger. If you're doing something with a remote, you could easily put on something that, you know, a beam of some sort that you could adjust with a servo, with a control on a.
Oh, yeah. You could totally mess with control. You could totally mess with somebody.
But watching him actually, and we were in a small room, and he had been practicing enough with it that he could get it to move and then kind of slow down its movement and then, you know, have it just sit and just turn slowly in a circle while it was just kind of holding its position. And they keep talking, you know, in this, in his letter here, he talks about like a whooshing sound, a very faint swirling, low swirling sound, which is, mm-hmm. you know, kind of, especially if you've got a number of engines going at once, it's fairly silent, but like a, you know, if you get a number going at once, you could definitely hear a sound like that.
And if it was a quiet, you know, more quiet night, or if you're out in the middle of nowhere with not much noise, I'm sure that you would be able to pick that up pretty easily.
Probably.
Like I said, is when it starts flipping around, that's what kind of changed my perception of it. Because the light, it would be one thing if it was kind of steady or started spinning, but it sort of spins on a completely different axis than what I would have expected it to do. But I agree with you. I mean, the technology that we have that's available to us these days makes stuff like this seem more likely to pop up and not be real, but this one, I'd at least like to learn more about what it would take to make it happen.
You can see it. You can see it.
It kind of reminded me of that. Remember that hoax for the planetarium?
Oh yeah.
Oh right.
Yep.
It reminded me a lot of that mm-hmm. kind of setup too.
Interesting.
If you built this out of like a light thin acrylic and you had enough motors on it, you could easily get something like that to light up with LEDs.
Well, maybe we can send that guy's kid in the balloon that got lost up in the sky. And
oh, God. Yeah, he had his 15 minutes of fame, definitely.
Yep.
All right, cool. So anybody that's interested, check out that video. We'll have the link in the show notes of the podcast. We have one more. I threw in a bonus story because I thought this story was all over the interwebs this week. I thought it was pretty cool. And Corey, you gave me a link to a story, I believe, similar to this, but not exactly the story.
Right.
Okay. So the headline is Milky Way has billions of Earth-sized planets. Billions of Earth-sized planets. And scientists now say that Earth-sized planets orbiting sun-like stars in the so-called habitable zone, the Goldilocks zone, are so common that there could be as many as 11 billion in the Milky Way galaxy alone. 11 billion Earth-sized planets. That is crazy. And what they did is they used a clever process of elimination. Astronomers calculated that 1 in 5 stars, like the one at the center of the solar system, hosts a planet capable of holding liquid water on its surface, and if it had the right chemical ingredients, it could support life. If lukewarm planets orbiting cooler red dwarf stars are included, the total rises to 40 billion. The nearest could be just 12 light years away. That's just in the neighborhood. Let's get in the car and go right now.
Yeah.
Why not?
I love the term a clever process of elimination. It's called math. I went to public school, and I've heard of math.
Well,
you know, it's sort of a strange
thing
these days.
There was a little bit more than that, because Kepler, this all comes from the Kepler observatory, not observatory, but the Kepler space telescope. They couldn't, before it broke down, they couldn't map everything. So they basically just took what they hit. This is basically Brad and I know Arbitron, the way Arbitron works. This is basically the way Arbitron ratings work. They take a sample and then they figure out a bigger number from that sample. They just average things out. So basically, you're right, Corey. They're doing math.
Yeah, I thought Arbitron was the robot that came with the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Could be. I don't know. Maybe, is that Armatron? No.
Maybe. That could be it.
Armatron was the brand of watches back in the 80s.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I had an Armatron.
The American Swatch.
I have a Casio right now. It's a Casio. See?
I took off my watch earlier, but it's the Super Friends. And it's still analog, and I would wondered why my day was going by so quickly, and then I realized that I hadn't thought to change the time of my watch.
Wow, you are on a point, aren't you?
Because I'm spoiled by my phone and everything else that updates for me.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, this is cool. The search for intelligent life and civilizations in the galaxy has only just begun. So we'll see what happens. They've already mapped out a crapped 603 potential exoplanets right now, including 10 Earth-sized candidates orbiting in the Goldilocks zone. So this is only a matter of years. This is only a few years that they've been mapping. So we've only just begun.
Get out of my head. I was thinking that.
That's all I will sing. I promise. I won't subject
Karen Carpenter
you.
Does look like an alien.
Unhealthy.
Probably more so now.
Yeah.
too soon?
Yeah. All right. On that note, this Galactic Netcast is brought to you by Audible.com. For you, our listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the chance to check out their awesome service. If you are on a commute, or if you're going on a long trip, or if you can't like read a book, but you can listen to something, this is perfect. All right, it's Audible audiobooks in your ears through your phone or whatever device you have. So, in the theme of this podcast, may we suggest the book "Aliens Rule"? It's a collection of unabridged readings chronicling the lives of people striving to survive as aliens rule Earth. In one of the stories, James Van Pelt's How Music Begins, a junior high school band director, struggles to keep the band members' spirits up after they've been shanghaied by unknown and unseen aliens and confined to a dormitory and practice auditorium. So that's just one of the many stories in this collection of short stories in Aliens Rule! And you can pick that as your free book, or pick one of your choice. Get that free 30-day trial to check out audible.com. Just use our use our URL, audibletrial.com/galacticnetcasts. That's audibletrial.com/galacticnetcasts. And we thank Audible for their support of the alien invasion. All right.
I wonder if James Van Pelt is related to Lucy or Linus Van Pelt.
That's true.
I don't know who these people are.
Lucy and Linus and Rerun. Yeah, the Peanuts gang.
Oh, I didn't know their last names. Okay.
Van Pelt.
That's awesome. All right, cool. Good question.
Oh, it's a terrible question, but thank you for making me feel better.
All right, time for the creature feature. And I know that you didn't prep the show, but your name's in front of the creature feature. Do you want to do this, Brad? Is this?
Yes, okay. Because it leads into my pick of the week.
All right, let it fade down. Okay, it's fading down.
I just wanted to let the music kind of go because it's creepy.
Yeah.
All right, it's done now.
Okay.
So Ender's Game is in the theaters, and the creature feature for this week is the Formix, a.k.a. the Buggers, from Ender's Game. Now, the Formix species consists of a hive-minded colony or colonies directed by queens. While often described as insectoid, the Formix are warm-blooded, and they respirate and perspire. If a queen dies, all the workers under her control lose their intelligence and ability to function immediately. But in the book Xenocide, implications exist that workers can escape the influence of a queen. Now, they kind of mention in the movie and in the book that there are ant species where if the queen dies, the workers, the entire colony will die because they're not getting direction from the queen as to what to do.
You know, that's the ultimate definition of pee-whipped. I can't function. I don't know what to do. I'll just die.
Wow. Do you need a hug?
No, I was acting. That was me acting.
Oh, you're acting. Okay. Yeah.
Or remembering.
Yeah.
Flashback. The Formic race is revealed to be trimorphic, defined as having or occurring in three different forms in the book in Shadows in Flight. Drones are much smaller and depend on a hive queen for survival, and their bodies are shaped to spend their lives clinging to her until upon her death they take flight to seek out a new queen.
Oh, that's sweet.
Drones are capable of individual thought and action, as well as mind-to-mind communication, more limited than that of a queen, whereas queens communicate instantaneously and can even do so with other species. Formix live in vast underground colonies, usually without light, informing the assumption that Formix make use of sensory apparatus outside the range of the electromagnetic spectrum visible to humans. In the first novel, they have artificial lighting, whereas in Xenocide, Ender claims that they rely on heat signature. The term Formix is derived from formica, the Latin word for ant, whereas bugger is a pejorative used by humans. Yet it was not until 1999's Ender's Shadow that the term Formic was first used interchangeably with bugger.
Did they even use the term Formic in the first book?
No, they did not.
That's what
they
I thought.
They were the buggers.
I don't remember that.
Yep.
Okay.
I have an end table made out of formica, I guess, which means it's made out of ants.
Corey, you know, I knew there was a reason why I invited you on the show.
I think technically that would be for Micah.
It's my end table. It didn't belong to anybody named Micah.
And the hits just keep on coming.
I wish I had the rim shot. All I have is...
That's what she said.
Or this.
There we go.
Okay, sorry.
No, in Latin, the letter I is pronounced E.
Now, I have a question. I don't remember this from the book. Did they explain ever how the buggers made their ships? Because this always bugs me about species like this, where they're more like insect-like than bipedal beings like us. That, you know, can manipulate tools and things like that. So how do they make like actual like spaceships?
You know, I've only read the first book. I attempted to read the second book, which is Speaker of the Dead, and I could not get into it. and I, you know, didn't read the rest of the series. So my understanding of this only goes to really the first book.
Okay.
Maybe they... So I don't know. We don't really find out in Ender's Game how – we barely understand by the end of Ender's Game how they function as a species, how they think, how they act, what they do. And it's not until Ender gets or finds the egg at the end of Ender's Game, and actually in the book he sets off with his sister, Valentine, to find a place for the egg to grow up, start a new colony.
Yeah, Ender's Game is very interesting because most of the story has to do with Ender and the training. Now, it doesn't really have to do with the aliens too much. You know, they're there, they're the enemy, but they're not really a major part of the story. It's basically his development, his, you know, the society and how they train the kids and his sister and brother and what they're doing. So it's, you know.
Yeah. And Corey, have you read the book at all?
No, I've never actually read it. It's one of those things that I think I would like to read before seeing the movie, but for some reason, I kind of skipped over it. I think Orson Scott Card, I remember him doing a superhero series, if I remember correctly, and that might have been where
Did the Ultimates. Well, he did Wild Cards, yes. Or wait. Is that right? No.
I'm thinking of the wrong thing then.
No, he did the Ultimate Iron Man miniseries.
Right. And Marvel had published Ender's Game and a couple other of the series as comics as well.
Battle School, I think, was an original one that they did as well. I just didn't want to try to give too much away. It really does focus on Ender and his brother and sister. Mm-hmm. You really get to see where Ender is in between the two. His sister washed out because she was too compassionate, and his brother Peter washed out because he was just a freaking sociopath.
Yeah, I was going to say psycho.
He was
just a little bit
so brutally violent that, you know, he was ejected from from the program.
Yeah.
And now we're kind of going into our picks. And
I can't wait to hear
that yet,
so. I can't wait to hear more of your thoughts in the movie. Definitely.
Yeah.
All right.
You know what we can do? We can talk about Stitcher Smart Radio.
Yes, we can. And I've been using Stitcher a lot more since I got hell last week from Vanessa saying I...
Deservedly hell.
You know, I'll eat crow. I'll admit it. It's a great service, and I wasn't using it enough. I was using a bunch of different ones. Like, Stitcher was part of my regiment, but I was using another one, another... You know, I had one for these certain podcasts. I had Stitcher for these certain podcasts, and I had, because I don't remember the reason why I set it up that way, but I migrated to Stitcher completely this week, and I'm happy about it. I'm very happy. So you should do that too. If you were doing what I was doing, you should definitely do all Stitcher all the time, because it's great service and we love it here at Galactic Netcasts. What did you listen to this week, Fred? What did you listen to this week?
Actually, just today I was listening to The Nerdist. Listened to the Harrison Ford interview, and then this week he's been interviewing or putting up interviews that he's done with Marvel people. So Clark Gregg from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I listened to that one. And, oh, crap in a hat.
Hey, on a side note, but I'll let you get your thoughts here. I have a question about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., okay? Mm-hmm. So is it next week's episode that involves the aftermath of the new Thor movie, or is it one that's going to be coming up later on in the season? Do you guys know?
I thought it was next week.
I'm pretty sure it's next week.
Towards that.
Okay.
Yeah, the movie, because the movie opens up tomorrow. Friday. Yeah.
You know what? And I wasn't going to go to the movie because I'm not the biggest Thor fan in the world, but I'm such a big fan of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. now that I almost have to go watch it. You know?
Tom Hiddleston also appeared. That was
I love that guy. That guy is awesome.
That guy is owning everything right now. Have you seen his new commercial to play off the AT&T commercials where he's talking to the four kids? I think they actually use kids from the commercials. The little girl looked recognizable from it.
Yeah.
And he's basically saying why Thor stinks and, you know, if you were adopted, he asks them, are you adopted? They're all like, no. He goes, well, you're not going to get me at all. It's so good.
And I've seen his videos of him doing impersonations of, what was it? He was using Loki's voice and, I forget exactly what it was. I swear to God, it was like him doing impersonations or him doing the Loki voice in somebody else's character or something like that. I forget. But he's awesome.
He is awesome. He's one of those things that the character is enriched by him in the comics because of his portrayal in the movies. Like you were saying, I wasn't a huge Thor fan either, and I really enjoyed the Thor film and enjoyed Thor in Avengers. But even more so, Robert Downey Jr. Made me like Iron Man after years of not giving a darn about that guy in comics. And now I really like the character so much more because of how he plays him. And what they did with Hiddleston with Loki, that character's become much more popular because of his portrayal. And in the movies, I think you can't do a movie without having him in it now.
And I think also, this is the case for me, I'm more interested in these Marvel movies since Avengers just because of they're all connected in some little way, you know?
Yep.
All right, so let's finish talking about Stitcher real quick. We kind of went down a rabbit hole there for a second.
Sort of, yeah.
You can listen to our show. You can listen to The Nerdist. You can listen to, what am I listening to? My regulars are Tech News Today. I listen to
all the Twitch shows are on there.
I listen to The Morning Stream, the Frog Pants shows. A great show called Treknologic. It's a Star Trek podcast where they watch and review a Star Trek episode every episode of their podcast. And I love that. Let's see, what else? Weird Things, Justin Robert Young, and Brian Brushwood. So I've got quite the ensemble of podcasts myself that I listen to all on Stitcher Smart Radio now. So what you should do is go to stitcher.com/galacticnetcasts and enter our promo code galacticnetcasts. Stitcher.com/galacticnetcasts and enter the promo code galacticnetcast. Sign up using that URL and that will show Stitcher that we are sending people their way. And we thank Stitcher for their support of the alien invasion. So you want to continue the Marvel conversation or do you want to go into picks? Because we could probably talk about Marvel for a long time if we really, really wanted to.
Yeah, the interesting thing about this movie, at least from what I've been gathering, is it's definitely going to tie into Avengers 2, would tie in with Avengers in that they broke certain rules, certain laws, getting Thor to Earth with the Bifrost destroyed. That was the way that they had to travel. And it looks like the Dark Elves actually in one of the opening scenes in the trailer, you see this large ship. I'm kind of wondering if that's how the Dark Elves, I haven't seen anything else to the contrary, at least yet. That's how they traveled to Midgard, to Earth, and wreak havoc. So,
yeah, it felt almost convenient in Avengers that Thor shows back up on Earth. Chasing down Loki when they had basically broken the pathway here.
Yeah,
and it's nice to see that they're explaining that they're not only addressing it with the fact that Jane basically goes up against him and she's like, you know, I saw you in New York. I saw you fighting all these guys. Why could you show up there and everything? And he talks about how hard it was and how there were repercussions of it. So it's cool that they're going to focus on some of that.
And I know that Joss even mentioned that, you know, Thor shows up. And that was his, you know, he had to bring Thor in without having to have this whole rigmarole. He shows up. And this is going to be the point where they kind of go look back at the story and go, okay, we need to explain this now. and they go with it because, you know, the ticket home was the Tesseract. You see the two of them, you know, yep. Turn the handles and they obviously must go back to Asgard. But, yeah, they don't address how he shows up on top of the plane, essentially.
Now, classically, what Marvel would do is they would leave that up to the reader. The reader would write in an explanation that made work out of it, and they would get a no prize.
Yes, the old no prize.
You guys should do your own comics podcast.
I need to probably stop doing some other things in my life so I have time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you and me both. All right, so let's move on to picks.
I don't have time.
Let's let's do our picks. I'm going to go first. I was really surprised by my pick. My girlfriend Stephanie said, do you want to watch a movie on Saturday? And I'm like, sure. What would you like to see? And she suggested After Earth. And I'm like, you know, let's give it a shot. And I'm glad that we did because the movie is way better than the reviews led you to believe it was bad. I thought it was not a brilliant movie, but I thought it was really, really good. Especially the whole Will Smith and his son, how they pretty much became a father and son. At the very beginning of the film, the kid is trying to prove to his father that he can be a soldier, and they're thrown into this situation where they crash on Earth and they have to survive. He has to go and do you want me to say exactly what happens, or do you think I should leave it up to the listeners to figure it out? I could be very vague if I need to.
I would say just you can say he has to go activate something.
Okay, there you go. And Earth is a much different place than it was when humans left. The animals and the creatures have been left to their own. they've gone beyond what they were before because there's no humans to get in their way. So they've gotten bigger and stronger and meaner. So the kid has to basically traverse this certain distance between one part of the crash ship and the next part of the crash ship. And the reason why I included this in Alien Invasion is because there are an alien, or there is an alien involved, because the ship that they were on was actually transporting an alien. You've seen this, right, Brad?
Yeah, this is my was my pick. I saw in the theater.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that was your pick. Okay. Yep. But this is your home video pick. We have a rule on this show.
Yep.
We can do it for movie release and we can do it for home video release. This is the home video release pick for me.
Because obviously not enough people listened to Brad when it was out in the theater.
Yes. Obviously we don't have a big enough audience.
People usually tune me out when I talk anyway, so this works out well.
That is not true. That's not true at all. In fact, I tune in more when you start talking.
Oh, you handsome devil, you.
It's the opposite. Anyways, I thought the visuals on this film were incredible. I thought the story was awesome. The characters, I could see how people thought the characters were a little bit two-dimensional because I think they tried too hard to be these different types of humans because the humans left Earth like 1,000 years ago. So they're a little bit different than we are now. What do you want to say, Brad?
The one thing that I seem to kind of to expand upon what you're saying, one of the biggest criticisms was Will Smith's performance. And I think the thing that people were not getting is that he had learned how not to feel, and that's what kept him alive. and he's attempting to, people are so used to Will Smith, doing yep. stuff and being out there and being funny and all that. And he purposely wanted to take a character that was a complete 180. And I think for what the script called for, I think he did an excellent job being the person he needed to be. And I think that people needed to kind of give him a little slack because they had an expectation of Will Smith, and they did not get the Will Smith that they have come to expect.
Yeah. If you were hesitant because of that fact, if you heard that about him, I think you should give him a shot, because just go into this movie thinking that or knowing that, and I think you'll get a lot more out of it. The father son, the way their relationship changes over this movie is incredible, you know?
Yep.
So I highly recommend it. If you get a chance, rent it, buy it, watch it. It's all over the place. You know, it's not in Blockbuster Video anymore. They're all closing.
I was actually surprised that they still had any locations open.
There's one
local to us.
Yeah, there's one in Wausau too, right?
No. I closed up soon after you left. Okay. You must have been keeping them open.
Yeah, I'm the one guy. I was the one guy that was in there. Yeah.
No, there's a it's been divided into like two shop locations, and there's a consignment store in it now and something else.
Oh wow, okay. So all you have left is Family Video, right?
Yeah, the Family Video over where you used to live. Yep, that's still open.
Yep. All right, so yeah, get it on Google Play, get it on Amazon, rent it, download it from iTunes. But I highly recommend it. It's not long. It's not that long, is it, Brad? It didn't seem that long to me. I could be mistaken.
I think it's about an hour and a half.
Which is amazing that that's short for a movie these days. But
yeah, no, it is short.
We've come to expect 2 to 3 hour epics so much in the theater that when you get a regular hour and a half movie.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's long for, if that was a comedy, it'd be long. But for an action like a blockbuster type movie, it's pretty short.
And for the amount of, you needed some backstory to this for it to work. And I think it was the right amount of time for it. And quite honestly, with the amount of action sequences in there, I think it's definitely the right length. It moved so quickly that you didn't even really notice the passage of time.
Yeah, and what was cool about this story, and they didn't really delve into it as much as they could have, is they built a whole backstory, like a whole history. M. Night Shyamalan. Shyamalan, is that how you say it? I feel like I'm saying it wrong.
It is now. I always feel like I'm saying it wrong, too.
M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong. I guess he wrote a whole like backstory, the history of Earth since they left Earth and founded this new place in the galaxy, wherever they ended up.
And he also explained why the creatures had evolved the way they had in that period of time. Okay. So I know that was one of the other complaints that people had too, is that it's only been 1,000 years, you know, evolution is not going to work that quickly. Mm-hmm. But he had actually explained how that would have happened. So. Okay.
All right. Interesting. All right. There you go. That is my pick. Let's move on to Mr. Corey.
All right. So, on Fox this season, I think it starts next week Friday, is a new show called After Human or
almost,
something like that.
Almost Human.
Yep.
Almost Human, which is not the continuation of the story of Vicky from Small Wonder. But I've been watching the commercials for it, and it's very intriguing, and it looks really good. Carl Urban's in it. It reminded me way back in the early days of Fox, they had a TV series that was based on the movie Alien Nation.
Yep.
And it sort of has that feel. But Alien Nation, I was a decent fan of the movie. It was pretty good. But the show really kind of dragged me in. And I wasn't watching a lot of TV then, so I had to kind of make a point of watching the series. And the show was out for a little while and seemed to disappear, but then they kept doing made-for-TV movies. So the Alien Nation series, you can buy the complete series, but then they also have another separate disc that is the TV movies that followed it up. But if you watch them, even with the original movie, it all kind of goes into, it seems like one long line. You start with the movie, and then you have to accept that the characters are played by different people. So there's no Manny Patinkin in the TV series, but it's pretty seamless across the board. And it always kind of stuck out to me how well it worked, that pairing of the human cop and the alien cop, and the integration of the aliens with the humanity. And how you were talking earlier about how District 9 had that sort of feel of it was about the humanity of people and how they reacted to these and treated these other alien creatures and stuff more than it was about just aliens being on Earth. And that's sort of what Alienation was too, is it was integrating this whole other species from another world and seeing them try to make things work in regular everyday life with human beings. And as an action show, it was pretty good too for the time.
And that's like that whole, what they did with Star Trek originally. It's Gene Roddenberry took common problems and common themes of human beings, humanity, and set it in space, and people accepted it more. So I think you can do that with aliens, and it being more accepted, the whole concept of racism and not accepting somebody because they look different than you. You can accept it more because they're aliens, as opposed to like being a different color of human. You know?
Yeah, that's a very good point.
And I could see where you're going with that almost human, because I think they're going to probably approach, or they're probably going to deal with a lot of the same stuff, because robotic discrimination and, not accepting them because they're not human, because they're a machine.
Yeah, and it's still a classic buddy film, too. I mean, you can watch this and then watch 48 Hours, and it's probably almost the same kind of tropes, but I always was a fan of the buddy cop film, so that works for me as a series.
So you give a high recommendation on this, Corey?
I do, and it's also, I mean, I had kind of forgotten about it up until this this new series was coming out, so I kind of want to go back and check it out again and catch those TV movies that I don't think I got to see all of.
I think you can catch some of this. They have a few episodes on YouTube, because I remember picking this as my pick, not the series as a whole, but a episode of the series that dealt with him giving birth to a child. And I remember finding that on YouTube. So I think you can find some of this on YouTube. But what we recommend is you go to our picks page at galacticnetcast.com. And get it through Amazon, through us, and you can help out the network. You can support us.
Yeah, I used to watch this religiously.
Yeah, I mean, Fox did some really good sci-fi stuff in their early days, stuff that you weren't seeing on the other channels.
Yeah, the first season of the War of the Worlds series was good.
Space Above and Beyond, that was an awesome series.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
All right.
Good stuff.
Thanks for the pick, Corey. That's a good one. All right. Brad, you ready?
Yeah, absolutely. Ender's Game is my pick. I don't want to give too much away because, the two of you haven't seen it yet. So, and I'm focusing more on the movie than the book. The movie really... Obviously, it deviates from the book a little bit in that the book kind of deals with Ender's journey and a lot of battle school stuff and him kind of working towards becoming a leader. I think the stuff that they pull out is not really a big deal. But if you want the full story, you definitely want to check out the book. Overall. God, the casting was just beautiful. Harrison Ford, who we have, Sir Ben Kingsley.
That crazy face tattoo.
Yeah. And he's kind of the combination of two characters from the book.
Is one of them Ed Helms?
No, one of them is not.
Oh, I get the reference. Okay, that's funny. What two characters is he representing?
Mezza Rackham, who is the war hero from the first invasion of the Formix.
Yep.
And a character from Australia named Maori,
mm-hmm.
who is another – I can't remember if he was a commander or he was somebody that who was higher up but that was a part of battle school. I don't remember specifically what he did, actually. Now that I think about
and
it,
Harrison
I just remember the name.
Harrison Ford played
Commander Graf.
Yeah, Graf.
There's one thing that I wanted to really talk about, but in order to talk about it, I would be giving away the film and just trying to get people to give me their insight as to what they thought about a specific scene. Basically, the whole of the book, of the story of Ender, is in this world, these aliens have attacked the Earth. And a lot of human beings died, and it's 50 years in the future from the point where the attack happened, and all of mankind has been moving towards defending themselves from another attack from the Formic race, from the buggers. So they developed this idea that because children's minds are so malleable that children can learn, adapt, grow, they decided that they would teach children how to fight, how to, you know, through games, through other activities, get them to become tacticians. But they had to find the brightest, the best. And along the way, and you learn this about Ender's family, his older brother Peter is a psychopath. He's incredibly brilliant, a wonderful tactician, but he has no restraint whatsoever. Ender's older sister, Valentine, incredibly brilliant, but she has too much compassion. She's the opposite of Peter. And Ender is unusual in that at this point in time, families are only able to really have two children. You can have a third, but you have to get special permission to have a third child. And Ender is a third, which is a little bit of a deal too. And if people want to make fun of him or tease him, they'll call him a third.
And that's where his name comes from too, Ender. He's
yeah.
the end.
So you start to learn that Ender is kind of he's the middle. He's in between Peter and Valentine, and where he kind of vacillates between the two. Everybody in the book is a lot younger. Ender is younger than he is in the movie. So when we're talking about children, we're talking about children.
Yeah, like what, he was 7 years old in the book, I think, right?
Yeah. 7 or 9 or something like that by the time he's done. And in the movie, he's probably 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's way older in the movie.
Why do you guys, why do you think that was done? Stephanie and I had a conversation last night about that, and I couldn't give a really good argument.
I think it was done that way because of certain elements of the film and the overall, the ending would not be believable in a movie format.
Okay.
This book is about the horrors of war, and these children are being trained to fight a war against an entire alien race. It is a little bit more believable that somebody that is almost teenaged or teenaged would have that mental capacity, whereas in a book you're given more to suspension of disbelief.
Okay.
Right. And also you have to find an actor or actress that can really portray that, and someone who's that young, it's a lot harder to find someone to be able to do that role, to maintain the schedule and stuff they'd have to for that big of a film.
Yeah.
Just like in Kick-Ass, the person that they chose to play Hit-Girl was older than what her portrayal is in the comics. because there's only so much that you can really do with children and have them be able to experience that stuff and play that stuff out in a film role.
Yeah. Ender's Game is a really, really heavy film, especially if you're a parent. That's a heavy film.
Yeah, because
in the movie,
right, because seeing that happen to a child would probably be very hard.
Or letting
Alex is about the age. My son Alex is about the age of Ender in the film, and holy crap! There's no way I could be a father and allow, even if it meant, you know, the stakes that they had. I would not have Alex be a part of that.
And in this society, it's, you don't have a choice, right? You don't have a choice.
No, you don't. All children are monitored to see if they have the skill, the ability to get into school, to fight the battle.
It seems like that's a good argument for Will Smith's portrayal of his character in After Earth, the way that he had to act detached and be cold.
Yeah.
Good way to combine those two.
Bring
Corey.
That right around.
Yeah, good job.
Bam.
Good throwback.
So, anyways, I've probably taken way too much time talking about this, but overall, it's a really, really good movie. A lot of the storyline with Valentine and Peter are completely cut out, as it is as they talk about it in the book. There are some changes, but. You know, I used to be the person that would say, oh, it's not like the book at all. It's crap. Well, there's only so much you can do with 100 minutes.
You're realistic.
There's no way you can do that. Yeah. And the things that they change and cut out for the sake of a film, not that important.
Okay.
Okay. But the real important question is Ben Kingsley actually the Mandarin in this?
Okay.
I didn't see rings on him, so I'm going to say no.
Okay. Maybe they're planetary rings.
Okay, Mandarin, that was the last Wolverine movie, right?
Iron Man.
Okay.
Iron Man.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Which I saw, which I don't know why I didn't get that. Okay. Duh. All right.
That's okay.
I don't live the comics like you guys do, all right? I don't live and breathe comics.
It's a sickness.
All right. Well, thank you very much, guys, for your picks. We talked about After Earth. We talked about Alien Nation, the complete series, and Ender's Game. And we'll have links to the first two on our picks page. Ender's Game, not quite yet. It just was released to theaters.
Well,
so
you could link the book.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll put the book. Yeah, we'll put the book on the picks page. Good call.
Or to Movie Phone.
The Movie Phone?
Moviephone.com. They can find out their local.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Good call.
Oh, where it's playing. Yes.
All right. So that's going to be it for this show. Before we ask you guys what your final thoughts are, got to remind everybody to please go subscribe to our show. You can do it on Stitcher. You can do it on iTunes. You can do it on multiple platforms. You can even subscribe to get it sent to your email when we publish new episodes. You'll get a notification with a link. And a lot of people, you'd be surprised, there's a lot more people than you'd think do it that way. So go to galacticnetcast.com or go to iTunes or, like we said, Stitcher. Stitcher's a great way to listen to our shows. Any way you listen to us or watch us, you can watch us on YouTube, youtube.com/galacticnetcast. So, Corey, I hope you're ready for this. We'll let Brad go first because we usually have Anessa go last. So, Brad, what's your final thought?
My final thought is read Ender's Game. Even if you don't like Orson Scott Card, the author, and he's gotten a lot of – he has very distinct views on things. He's very vocal about those views. If you don't agree with those views, go to the library and check out the book. You don't necessarily have to buy it.
And he's not getting hardly any money from the movie, so that'll make you feel better too.
Yeah. Yeah. Regardless, it is a very good book. It is a very good movie, and you know, especially if you're a parent. Yeah, I think I've said before that Poltergeist is a more horrifying movie after being a parent. There's certain things that you will better understand having that perspective, and I think reading Ender's Game, and it's on my list of things I need to reread, is going to be probably a bit more terrifying now that I have a son, and it is a very good book. So I highly recommend that people, if they love sci-fi, to read Ender's Game, or if they have read it again, because it's an exceptional read.
Or listen to it on Audible, because
listen to it on Audible.
They have a full cast recording of it, it's like a dramatic play.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so check it out.
Nice.
All right, Corey, what's your final thought?
My final thought is take time to figure out what your dreams are and do something about them. I got laid off last year, and Dave, I think, has some relation to this as well. And I kind of got into a place where I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I'm still figuring some of that stuff out. But the best things that I can say is that there were things that I was already kind of doing before I lost my job. Just for me, things that I enjoyed, like making a comic and doing a podcast. And because of Dave, I started doing a Spreecast. And because of Dave again, I got invited to be on this tonight. So it's important to find the things that you love to do and just do them, so that when surprises come up and you have the time, you have something to fill your life with. And so thank you very much, Dave, for bringing me into this. Another thing that I owe you for.
Wow. Well, you're welcome. I appreciate the kind words, Corey. That's awesome.
And he's a pretty decent guy, isn't he, Corey?
Well,
so far.
Stop it. Stop. Stop with that silliness. I have to add something to what you just said, Corey. If you like it, if you have passion enough for it, then keep on doing it, even when you get a full-time job that takes up most of your time.
Yep.
That's what happened to me. I started these podcasts when I was unemployed, and we continued them even after I got re-employed. So
I was biting my fingernails. I'm like, oh, he's got a regular gig now. I wonder if we're gonna keep doing this.
I was more worried when he got a girl.
Well, luckily,
so was she.
Yeah. Good point. Very good point. No, she's very supportive of what I do. So
she seems wonderful. Yeah. She seems absolutely wonderful, yeah. And you're very lucky to have her, and she's very lucky to have you.
Wow. All right. These shows don't usually end this way. I'm not used to it. Stop.
That's what she said.
There you go.
Twice.
Corey, great job tonight. Appreciate you stopping in. Hopefully we'll have you back sometime. If not on this show, we'll figure out a way of making a show that you can be on.
It would be my pleasure and my honor.
Comic book show, guys.
Yeah, the problem that I have right now is I don't collect comic books anymore. I stopped.
But you know the comic books. You know the old ones, you know? So
all I have to do is turn my chair around 180 degrees, and I've got more than I could shake a stick at.
All right, that's going to do it. Hey, that's the Alien Invasion. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, we'll see you guys later.
See you, Dave. Bye.
Bye.
Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.